4. Though Pyotr Stepanovich was perhaps far from being a stupid man, Fedka the convict had said of him truly that he would make up a man himself and go on living with him too. He came away from Lempke fully persuaded that for the next 6 days anyway he had put his mind at rest, and this interval was absolutely necessary for his own purposes. But it was a false idea, and founded entirely on the fact that he had made up for himself, once for all, an Andrei Antonovitch who was a perfect simpleton. Like every morbidly suspicious man, Andrei Antonovitch was always exceedingly and joyfully trustful the moment he got onto sure ground. The new turn of affairs struck him at first in a rather favourable light, in spite of some fresh and troublesome complications. Anyway, his former doubts fell to the ground. Besides, he had been so tired for the last few days, so exhausted and helpless, that his soul involuntarily yearned for rest. But alas, he was again uneasy. The long time he had spent in Petersburg had left ineradicable traces in his heart. The official and even the secret history of the younger generation was fairly familiar to him. He was a curious man and used to collect manifestos, but he could never understand a word of it. Now he felt like a man lost in a forest. Every instinct told him that there was something in Pyotr Stepanovich's words utterly incongruous, anomalous, and grotesque. Though there's no telling what may not happen with this younger generation, and the devil only knows what's going on among them, he mused, lost in perplexity. And at this moment, to make matters worse, Blum poked his head in. He had been waiting not far off through the whole of Pyotr Stepanovich's visit. This Blum was actually a distant relation of Andrei Antonovitch, though the relationship had always been carefully and timorously concealed. I must apologize to the listener for devoting a few words here to this insignificant person. Blum was one of that strange class of unfortunate Germans who are unfortunate not through lack of ability, but through some inexplicable ill luck. Unfortunate Germans are not a myth, but really do exist even in Russia, and are of a special type. Andrei Antonovitch had always had a quite touching sympathy for him, and wherever he could, as he rose himself in the service, had promoted him to subordinate positions under him. But Blum had never been successful. Either the post was abolished after he had been appointed to it, or a new chief took charge of the department. Once he was almost arrested by mistake with other people. He was precise, but he was gloomy to excess and to his own detriment. He was tall and had red hair. He stooped and was depressed, and even sentimental. And in spite of his being humbled by his life, he was obstinate and persistent as an ox, though always at the wrong moment. For Andrei Antonovitch, he, as well as his wife and numerous family, had cherished for many years a reverent devotion. Except Andrei Antonovitch, no one had ever liked him. Yulia Mikhailovna would have discarded him from the first, but could not overcome her husband's obstinacy. It was the cause of their first conjugal quarrel. It had happened soon after their marriage, in the early days of their honeymoon, when she was confronted with Blum, who, together with the humiliating secret of his relationship, had been until then carefully concealed from her. Andrei Antonovitch besought her with clasped hands, told her pathetically all the story of Blum and their friendship from childhood. But Yulia Mikhailovna considered herself disgraced forever, and even had recourse to fainting. Von Lempke would not budge an inch, and declared that he would not give up Blum or part from him for anything in the world, so that she was surprised at last and was obliged to put up with Blum. It was settled, however, that the relationship should be concealed even more carefully than before, if possible, and that even Blum's Christian name and patronymic should be changed, because he, too, was, for some reason, called Andrei Antonovitch. Blum knew no one in the town except the German chemist, had not called on anyone, and led, as he always did, a lonely and niggardly existence. He had long been aware of Andrei Antonovitch's literary peccadilloes. He was generally summoned to listen to secret tête-à-tête readings of his novel. He would sit like a post for 6 hours at a stretch, perspiring and straining his utmost to keep awake and smile. On reaching home, he would groan with his long-legged and lanky wife over their benefactor's unhappy weakness for Russian literature. Andrei Antonovitch looked with anguish at Blum. "I beg you to leave me alone, Blum," he began with agitated haste, obviously anxious to avoid any renewal of the previous conversation which had been interrupted by Pyotr Stepanovitch. "And yet this may be arranged in the most delicate way, and with no publicity. You have full power." Blum respectfully but obstinately insisted on some point, stooping forward and coming nearer and nearer by small steps to Andrei Antonovitch. "Blum, you are so devoted to me and so anxious to serve me that I am always in a panic when I look at you. You always say witty things and sleep in peace, satisfied with what you've said. But that's how you damage yourself. Blum, I have just convinced myself that it's quite a mistake, quite a mistake. Not from the words of that false, vicious young man whom you suspect yourself. He has won you by his flattering praise of your talent for literature. Blum, you understand nothing about it. Your project is absurd, I tell you. We shall find nothing, and there will be a fearful upset and laughter, too. And then Yulia Mikhailovna—" "We shall certainly find everything we are looking for." Blum advanced firmly towards him, laying his right hand on his heart. "We will make a search, suddenly, early in the morning, carefully showing every consideration for the person himself and strictly observing all the prescribed forms of the law. The young men Lyamshin and Telyatnikov assert positively that we shall find all we want. They were constant visitors there. Nobody is favorably disposed to Mr. Verhovinsky. Madame Stavrogin has openly refused him her graces, and every honest man, if only there is such a one in this coarse town, is persuaded that a hotbed of infidelity and social doctrines has always been concealed there. He keeps all the forbidden books, reliefs, reflections, all, Herzen's works. I have an approximate catalogue in case of need." "Oh, heavens! Everyone has these books. How simple you are, my poor Blum!" "And many manifestos," Blum went on, without heeding the observation. "We shall end by certainly coming upon traces of the real manifestos there. That young Verhovinsky I feel very suspicious of." "But you are mixing up the father and the son. They are not on good terms. The son openly laughs at his father." "That's only a mask." "Blum, you've sworn to torment me. Think, he is a conspicuous figure here, after all. He's been a professor. He is a well-known man. He'll make such an uproar, and there will be such jibes all over the town, and we shall make a mess of it all. And only think how Yulia Mikhailovna will take it." Blum pressed forward and did not listen. "He was only a lecturer. Only a lecturer, and of low rank when he retired." He smote himself on the chest. "He has no marks of distinction. He was discharged from the service on suspicion of plots against the government. He has been under secret supervision, and undoubtedly still is so. And in view of the disorders that have come to light now, you are undoubtedly bound in duty. You are losing your chance of distinction by letting slip the real criminal." "Yulia Mikhailovna, get away, Blum!" von Lempke cried suddenly, hearing the voice of his spouse in the next room. Blum started, but did not give in. "Allow me, allow me," he persisted, pressing both hands still more tightly on his chest. "Get away," hissed Andrei Antonovitch. "Do what you like, afterwards. Oh, my God!" The curtain was raised, and Yulia Mikhailovna made her appearance. She stood still majestically at the sight of Bloom, casting a haughty and offended glance at him, as though the very presence of this man was an affront to her. Bloom respectfully made her a deep bow without speaking, and, doubled up with veneration, moved towards the door on tiptoe, with his arms held a little away from him. Either because he really took Andrei Antonovitch's last hysterical outbreak as a direct permission to act as he was asking, or whether he strained a point in this case for the direct advantage of his benefactor, because he was too confident that success would crown his efforts. Anyway, as we shall see later on, this conversation of the governor with his subordinate led to a very surprising event which amused many people, became public property, moved Yulia Mikhailovna to fierce anger, utterly disconcerting Andrei Antonovitch, and reducing him at the crucial moment to a state of deplorable indecision.